Monster Man, episode 251, Spider, Giant Marine, and Spridgen, apparently? Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we'll be taking a look at two more monsters from the S chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before we do that, a little bit of business. There is still a little time remaining on the Trophy RPG Kickstarter. That's the role-playing game that I'm writing a small part of. And I said I would put a link in the show notes in the previous episode, and then I didn't do it, so sorry about that. Anyway, I'll put a link in the show notes in case you want to check that out. Okay, our first monster for today is the Spider, Giant Marine. I have to confess that if the Spider, Giant Water is somewhere else, I've missed it or forgotten about it. If it's already been covered, which it would have to have been, I don't know where it was covered, but there is a reference to the Spider, Giant Water QV. So it must have been in the Monster Manual, and it's just been so long ago that I forgot about it. What this means is that the Spider, Giant Marine is like the Spider, Giant Water, except that it lives in salt water, unlike the Spider, Giant Water, which lives in fresh water. This feels like splitting hairs very fine to me. Now, when I looked this up, I initially looked up a group of arthropods called sea spiders. Now, sea spiders are not really spiders. Although they are relatively closely related to spiders, they're chelicerae, or that's probably being pronounced wrong, but they're within that, I don't know the taxonomic term, but they're not that distantly related to spiders, and they look wild. It's a shame that there isn't like a monster version of them, because they're really cool and evocative looking. But in fact, the Spider, Giant Marine is also based on real spider behavior. These are spiders that live at least part of their lives underwater. Probably the most famous example is the diving bell spider, Argyroneta aquatica. And what it does is that it creates basically, well, just like the name implies, it creates a little structure out of vegetation and webbing that holds a bubble of air even underwater, much like a diving bell. And so it can go around and hunt underwater and get the things that it needs, and then it sort of pops back up into its little house that it's made in order to, you know, breathe. And so the Spider, Giant Marine basically, that's what it does. It creates a little underwater habitat for itself out of webbing and, you know, whatever vegetation it can find, and then it lurks there, and it can pop out and go underwater for a bit to prey on things. So, I mean, it's just like any other spider, except that you wouldn't expect to find a spider underwater. And the connection to a real-world animal means that when your players go, wait a minute, what the heck are giant spiders doing under the water? You can say, well, the diving bell spider, Argyroneta aquatica, etc., etc., etc. So this is fine. I do feel like we are starting to run out of good material that we can mine out of spiders. They are probably among the deepest mines of the natural monster types, but even they, eventually you're going to hit a period of diminishing returns. Either way, it's a pretty good monster, and I do like the idea of these giant versions of the diving bell spider's air-containing pocket. And if this wouldn't work for complex physical reasons, I think this is still not the D&D monster you want to be applying that thinking to. Next up, we have the Spridgen. Now, I have always called this creature a Spriggan. It has two G's, and that is a hard G sound, typically, in English. Not absolutely always, because there's no absolutely always in English. But apparently this is a Cornish word, and it is traditionally pronounced Spridgen. So, there's something new I learned, but the chances are that throughout the rest of this entry, I'm going to call it Spriggan, just because that is always how I have thought of that creature. Now, this is a creature, as I mentioned, from Cornish folklore, and it follows a pattern that by now should be pretty recognizable to connoisseurs of the fairy tale monster in D&D. That is to say that the folkloric Spridgen is basically your kind of mischievous sprite. It plays tricks on people. It's a bit more aggressive and mean-spirited than a lot of other mischievous folklorish sprites. They're known for particularly being kind of like bad-tempered. They're cranky, I guess is probably what they're like. And in the folklore, they are very fond of treasure, so there are lots of stories about them being related, you know, like they know where treasure is buried or they have a treasure or something like that. So I guess in that sense, we might say that they're a little bit like leprechauns. And anyway, here they are translated into being a species a little bit like gnomes. And they have the ability to change size. So if you run into them, some of them might be small and some of them might be large, giving you kind of a varied encounter where you're fighting both sort of person-sized opponents and much larger ones without having to explain what these two different types of monsters are doing working together. And I believe, although I couldn't prove it off the top of my head, that shape-shifting is one of the characteristics of the Sprigenian folklore. One of the things that I will never fully understand about older versions of D&D, well, no, okay, I do understand it, because it's driven by a desire for completeness. Every different variety of folkloric creature, even though they are all at some level pretty much the same, has to be given a unique entry. And that means that ultimately you're going to try and relate them back to the other creatures that already occupy that space. So, you know, pixies or fairies or, well, actually fairies are just elves, but, you know, sprites or pukas or whatever it might be. In this case, it's gnomes. Spridgens are bad gnomes. The problem with this is that there are already bad gnomes, right? The Svirfneblin. As I said way back in the gnome episode, my conception of Dungeons & Dragons always struggles a bit with gnomes because it's very hard to find a thing for them to do that isn't a bit similar to halflings or a bit similar to dwarves. Right? They often struggle to establish a distinct identity, as opposed to the more ethereal or natural or philosophical elves, or the more, you know, grim, pragmatic, mechanical, industrial dwarves, or the halflings, you know, these bucolic characters who like the simple pleasures of life, right? Those have very sort of accessible concepts, whereas gnomes, I guess, are kind of like, what if dwarves had a sense of humor, which is fun, but I don't know that it's such a strong thing that it then requires, like, evil alternative versions, two of them. Now, they're not necessarily in service to some kind of supernatural evil. They're just kind of, you know, bandits and robbers and that sort of thing. And they, you could have a fun fight with them. I think they've got a great illustration, which puts me in mind of kind of like the Border Reavers. And these were these guys who inhabited the region on the sort of Anglo-Scottish border in the late Middle Ages and the Renaissance. And this was a period when there was a lot of just these, like, these clans or, well, extended families. They weren't clans in the clan sense, but colloquially clans, which extended to both sides of the border and which were constantly, like, raiding back and forth, like stealing cattle or, you know, carrying out vendettas against each other. And that sort of somewhat late medieval armor that the Sprigian is portrayed in is maybe a bit more heavily armored than the Border Reavers, but there's just something about the combination of that face and that armor made me think of the Border Reavers, and I do like the idea of them as kind of border creatures, you know, attacking travelers in places where travelers have to go through, but where the authorities don't have a very clear reach. You know, being on the border between England and Scotland sometimes made it possible for reavers to escape capture by being on the wrong side of the line, or the right side of the line from their perspective, I guess. And one can imagine that the opposite of the curious, fun gnome persona is a sort of grim, ruthless, pragmatic persona, and that kind of, like, ill-temperedness, right? We think that gnomes are sort of quite ready to be pleased, and that Sprigians probably are not. And that kind of reminds me of the kind of hard-bitten character of the Border Reavers. I make no claims as to its historical accuracy, I really don't know, but a very accessible and fun book about the Border Reavers is The Steel Bonnets by George MacDonald Fraser, who my readers will probably best recognize as the author of the Flashman series of novels. So anyway, these guys are all right. I mean, I don't know that I would put in the thing about gnomes necessarily, but just like, yes, there's a clan of some kind of fey creatures. They live in those hills, and, you know, they can be quite dangerous. They're ill-tempered and, you know, greedy for gold. But if you were to find all the gold they've robbed from the travelers over the years, then that would really be something good. Yeah, I think that's a fine low to kind of early mid-level antagonist. So Sprigians, they are okay. All right, that's all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through the S chapter. And we're going to talk about the Squealer and the Squirrel. But before that, we're going to have a special episode in which we talk about making alien monsters really alien on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.